bringing Gosport closer to you. Bob Whitbread on Gosport Hospital Radio.
And this is the Carpenters version of Solitaire.
There was a man, a lonely man, who lost his love through his indifference. That went unshared until it died within his
bringing Gosport closer to you. Paul Dodd on Gosport Hospital Radio.
I have the desk. My turn. Right. So, What was the first record he wrote for ABBA then?
Ring Ring.
Ring Ring. So he wrote that in 1973 for their entrance into Norway's challenge for the Eurovision Song Contest. And they only came third. Didn't do very well at all, to be fair, with that one. And of course, the following year, they had Waterloo, written by ABBA themselves, which took them all the way to the top. But this was what started their career. Ring Ring, ABBA. Ring Ring, ABBA. I'm surprised, actually, you know, it didn't do better in the picking them for Eurovision Song Contest, because there's not a lot of difference between that and Waterloo in the bass tune.
Well, I suppose, really, you could remember that one, as you said, that came number one in Sweden. Didn't do... It came third in the Euro, didn't it?
Yeah.
So by the time they got on to the next one, they had to have something very similar, but not the same. That makes sense.
I thought it would have done.
Oh, you could have done a favour for me. You could have put the Swedish one on. That's quite interesting to listen to, that one.
Ah, that goes ringy ringy.
I'm just sitting there thinking of Neil Sedaka sat there with his writer of music, Greenfield, and they're sitting there.
let's have a think. It sounds a little bit, I think, like this. Well, he wasn't singing to the first one, I'm sure he's not going to sing to that one. That's for sure.
Well, I suppose when you if you go to a big party and you had a few drinks, it ends up sounding like that.
So that's actually Ring Ring in Swedish, Spanish and German, that version.
But yeah, they got around with their languages. Well, they were a very continental European music, weren't
cosmopolitan
they?
Group.
Yes, I mean, you've got to remember, turn the clock back to when they had the Eurovision at those days with those entries, and it was very puppet on a string, all these sort of things were all very similar types of music, weren't they?
And that was the beauty about the 70s, and that's why I love the 70s so much, because the music was versatile. You could have a laugh with the music. You know, you had songs like, you had groups like the Baron Knights.
Yeah, yeah.
You had songs like Grandad,
yeah.
Grandma, you know, Benny Hill. Actually, would they play that now?
Well, I don't know. They, you know. I don't see why not.
You know, you had glam. I mean, I used to do a show on here on the
you
Friday.
You had the Bee Gees.
Yeah, you know, I used to do glam and glitz because the glam rock. You know, David Bowie, The Sweet, those sorts of groups that were just wildly out there.
And there was also a lot of bands from the tail end of the 60s that moved into the 70s.
Yeah, we got rid of them as soon as the 70s.
Yeah, but there was a lot of changes going on with
yeah
them.
And I mean, you when know, you think
Moody Blues, for instance,
Moody Blues, Rolling yeah. Stones, all of those.
Yeah,
what a shame Neil Starkin never wrote anything for the Moody Blues. We could have played you one of them.
Yeah, I know, but I played that like a couple of weeks ago when I'd done the Moody Blues band.
But yeah, they're just so much carry over. And then the end of the 70s, we had that loving period of the 80s. Music just died then. Or did it?
I'm just trying to think of a reason why it would do that. And I suppose our generation was getting into it. We was getting married and we was having families and businesses and all sorts of things. So the younger people coming in maybe wanted to. I mean, when you think of things like Squeeze and all these other bands that was coming out at the end of the 60s, Wham! And all those coming out, you know, in the end of the 70s. I mean, that was a change in music, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And even Queen.
I mean, Queen came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, but, punk rock came out in the 70s.
But they didn't really get hugely big until late 70s.
Yeah.
And that's when they started doing all the big stuff.
Early 80s.
And those bands that was coming in at the beginning of the 70s were mature enough, so by the time they come to the end of the 70s, they stayed the course.
Yeah,
they would be big. Of course, the other thing you had was in the days that I remember, we used to go to gigs, which were classed as big gigs, and you get 400 in there.
Yeah,
because the venue was no bigger.
You know, I said this last week, and you get it with the 80s. If you see an 80s pop star now in a pub and you ask them to play, they'll quite happily pick up a guitar and start singing. First time I ever heard Paul McCartney was in a pub in Campbelltown. He was sitting there at the bar drinking, just around from.
What was he doing up there? Doing
well, he lives up in Mullican Tarway.
Yeah, no.
And the George in Campbelltown was his local.
Yeah.
So whenever we went alongside, which we used to do with the firings and everything, you could almost guarantee on a Saturday night he'd be in there if he wasn't gigging. Well, he'd be in there having a drink.
Funny you should say that, because in fact he's just released another record, Paul McCartney. Now that's how long ago are we talking about? 60 years ago.
Yeah.
64 years ago, something like that, he first started, and he can still produce the music. Like a lot of these true artists, I mean.
And can still play the instruments.
I knock him occasionally because he went to school with me, because he was a bit of a bozo when he was at school with me. But it's sailing, you know, Rod Stewart. Now, he has progressed on from. He started off on the street singing as a busker.
Yeah.
And then he moved up to all sorts of things, and now he's even singing Tony Bennett songs. I think he thinks he's Tony Bennett as well.
Well, he's a bit of a crooner who's lost his voice now, isn't he? Yeah. And talking about where the boys are, 1961, Connie Francis.
Down some street in town, and I know he
Go on then, tell me all about Where the Boys Are.
Oh, well, there's a story to this. Apparently, it's named after a film that she was singing. She was in it, and she was singing the tune, and they didn't have a song. So she suggested, why don't you contact Neil Sedaka and Greenfield? And Pasternak, who's the producer, turned around and said, well, really, we want something a bit more. You know, you just do doo-wop-doo-wop music and all that sort of thing. So she insisted, came down. And Neil Sedaka said, well, I don't really do all this sort of stuff, you know. It's just a big film, motion picture stuff. Anyway, Connie Francis insisted on carry on chatting, and she convinced Pasternak to let,
£30 in free bet.
Let Neil do it. And and so he came back, and he was told he had a week until the next Wednesday to write it on the table. If it wasn't there, they'd go with something else. And that is the end. That's where it all came from, Where the Boys Are.
Oh, right.
One of her biggest hits. And, I mean, even Neil Sedaka turned around and said, when the name of the film was called Where the Boys Are, I said, well, what sort of name is that for a record? But they come up with it, and despite his misgivings, he and Sedaka, in fact, completed two Where the Boys Are theme songs, and in order to meet Pasternak's deadline, the demos of Sedaka singing both songs was delivered by an airline hostess who personally knew Connie Francis and was working a flight to Florida. So Sedaka and Greenfield had indicated to Francis that they both much preferred the one of the two proposed, which was Where the Boys Are. And one of the versions we loved and the other we hated. Joe Pasternak came to me after this on the Wednesday and said, with the decision, you're right, Connie, he said, this is the right song. And it was the version three that they liked. So there you are. Okay. See, it does happen.
Yeah. So, back to the 70s then. I believe this was the last song that ever charted for Neil Sedaka.
Oh, we're going back to the 70s now. What are you tucked in there?
The Queen of 1964.
Yeah. You're more than likely right. I've looked on my list I've got here somewhere, and I can't find it on there.
So this is a song about Jenny. She was a former groupie whose glory days in the rock scene have long passed, and the song traces her decline from a woman who once moved freely in celebrity circles to someone forgotten and alone.
Who else done something?
I think Andrew knows about that, doesn't he? Sorry, I couldn't resist it. I'm probably off air now.
Yeah. Who else sang a song very similar to that? Big American singer still going. All the women love him now. Even though he's got all the facelifts and everything, he's doing very well. But he sang about a cocktail waitress, didn't he? Cocktail. Do you know, Mike? I'm trying to remember his name now. You're going to have to help me here, Paul. My mind's let me down here.
The only cocktail waitress I can think about was...
It's where he's singing. It goes back 20 years later, and she's still in the same bar working there, and she's looking...
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his name. Tall American singer.
Yeah.
He's been going for years.
Never mind. We'll think about it.
We'll think about it. Meanwhile,
The Queen of 1964. From 75.
Yeah. That makes sense.
In 26.
Yeah.
She was the queen of 1964, but the truth of the matter is nobody wants her anymore. There was a time she could have shown her how, but nobody wants an overage groupie now. When it came to a superstar, Jenny was a bragger. She spent it all around everyone in town that she once had Mick Jagger. Ooh. But there's no doubt when the truth comes out, true love will always conquer. She didn't get Mick, but she got a kick and a black eye from Bianca. She was the queen of 1964. What a pity she became the shadow of the girl she was before. She passed her prime.
Just taken us 3.5 minutes to realise he was talking about Barry Manilow. Yeah, we're both at that age where actually names evade us now. And actually,
we nearly got to doodling on bits of paper.
Yeah. It's only when he said, "Look, he's very, very old, and he's got a big nose," and I went.
But I noticed you looked at me when I said that.
He said a very, very old singer, and I went, "Oh no, he didn't say Bob Whitbread." So 1966. This next one. Actually, this guy had more success with Sedaka's hits than Sedaka did.
Yeah. Of course, he was a bit of a he was early day rocker singer, you know, and he had a good voice to go with it as well.
So this was his debut single, and it was Sonny, Bobby Hebb.
Sonny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sonny, Thank you for the sunshine bouquet, sunny. Thank you for the love you've brought my way. You gave to me your all in all, and now I feel 10 feet tall. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for the truth you let me see. Sunny, thank you for the facts from A to Z. My life was torn like windblown sand, then a rock was formed when we held hands.
Sunny,
sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for that smile upon your face. Sunny, thank you for that gleam that flows with grace. You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. Sunny one so true, yes, I love you. Sunny, yesterday all my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me and really, really eased the day. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you. I love you.
So how many versions of Sunny were there then?
It's got to be in about the charts. Four or five.
There was four in
well,
the charts.
Well, we've already had two now.
Okay.
Haven't we? We had the couple.
There was three in 66 alone.
Yeah. But there's a good one coming up soon, isn't there?
Yeah. So who were the three in 66?
In 66?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Definitely wasn't the Beatles.
Nope.
But it could have been... Yeah, 60s.
One will shock you.
Oh, Michael Jackson?
Yeah. Georgie Fame was one of them.
Yes, he did.
You'd expect
it.
That.
I expect that one. What was the other one?
Cher.
Yes, I do remember
Cher
that
did
one.
It.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was quite that old, to be
oh,
fair.
Oh, yeah, I met her a couple of times in the early 60s. Yeah.
I didn't think she came onto the scene till late 60s.
You have to turn the faders off here because she has got a magnificent figure. She really has. And I'm standing there looking at her and you're talking to me about music.
So who did it in the 70s then?
Oh, well, you know the answers. Well, who is it in the 70s?
And it was the most successful version of it.
Oh, who's the American? The organist, keyboard player.
No, Boney M.
Oh, that one. But didn't, what's his name do it?
Well, in this country.
Oh, in this country. In the, oh, yeah, no. Boney M done a good... That's a good... You're going to be listening to a good one, because this is...
Took it to number three.
Yeah. But I wonder how many people actually realised that it was Neil that wrote it. Neil said that could have wrote it. It's strange.
Well, it sounded a bit like this.
Yeah.
So that was Boney M's version of Sonny. Not dissimilar, a bit more synthesised.
Totally different, though.
Yeah.
Totally different. I don't suppose Neil Stacker thought for one moment, now we know about Boney M and how long they've been going and all the other things they've done, how they progressed along even to bigger stuff. I mean, he was taking a chance then.
Yeah,
because that could have totally ruined his song. Because when you're writing music for other people, you don't want it to be ruined. You want it to do well.
Because that was only the second song that they'd ever recorded, so he really was taking a bit of a punt. Although, was he taking a punt, or did they buy the royalties? Because I mean, it had been 11 years since.
Well, he's got the music. He's got the music rights.
Yeah.
And I would have thought that the guy who owned them, because they was a what we used to call a session, done by session musicians.
That's fair.
And so it's the recording studio that gets the money for it.
German, weren't they, originally?
Why you say that? I thought they was Dutch or Danish, something like that. I can't remember now.
European, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Right, well, that leaves me out.
So. Next one,
Laughter in the Rain. That's a big hit of theirs, and I'm flicking through now. Have we got a year for that?
1974.
All right, so yeah, another big one. It was just,
well, you say it was a big one, but it got to number 15 over here, but it did get to number one in the States.
But you've got to remember at this time. He's in the UK now.
Yeah.
He's in the UK. He's
selling music back to the Americans.
Elton John has taken him on as
he
his...
He did, didn't he?
As his record manager. Because he's got a recording... I think he's still got the same studio, Elton John. And that was pumping out a lot of good music as well. He took... and Neil Stack came over. And I think the idea was, well, if the music's not taking me... in America, it's doing well in the state, in the UK, why don't I come over there and see if I can pick up some good stuff from the British music.
Reminds me of that song, I'll Go Where Music Takes Me. That's a strange thing.
He took it. No, he just didn't go by himself. He moved it all lock, stock and barrel over here.
Because he virtually stopped recording in 63, 64, didn't he? And it wasn't until Elton John picked him up in the 70s that he started again.
That's right, because Brill, the company he was working for when he first got introduced into the music from school, Brill, the big music building that was there, and that's where he stayed all the time until it all started going... Well, it didn't go pear-shaped, it was simply music was going in a different direction. So I suppose he must have thought, well, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. So he came over to the UK, set up his home here, brought his family over here, and he was here for about 6 or 7 years.
And still stayed with the same recording label as well for that beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
So for that 9-year hernia, hiatus rather, he still stayed with RCA.
So, I mean, that's a risky thing to do.
Yeah, very much so. So this is his what's that word when it's last but one?
Penultimate.
His penultimate recording in the UK. Got to number 1 in the States and got to number 15 over here, and it is Laughter in the Rain.
Shiver run up my spine. I feel the warmth.
Laughter in the Rain, Nils Sedaka. Right, so in the 70s, one of the you were either a singles buyer or an LP buyer. Mm-hmm. And not very many people who had singles bought LPs, and neither the other way around. They tended to stick to one way or another.
Yeah, but what happened in the 70s?
Well, they brought out KTEL Records. They brought LPs of singles.
Yeah, but dads were buying their stereograms.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which played albums. Not only just 45s, but they played albums.
Yeah, that's why.
And it was a big fashionable thing to put five albums on, playing if it was a party or something. So that's why albums got popular.
Yeah.
But you're quite right. Woolworths done those compilation things. I've got a couple at home still.
But you tended to like the group you liked. So, you know, for you, for instance, loving the Kinks, you wouldn't have gone out.
Blues.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have gone out and bought the top five records. You'd have gone out and bought the Kinks' album and the Moody Blues' album, so you only listen to Moody Blues or the Kinks all night long.
Yeah, but what's the avenue now people buy music? They very rarely buy vinyl now, do they? It's got to be a fad now.
It's got to be a download now.
Yeah. It's
so all, now it's gone back to the singles bit again.
So music is available online, stream,
saying that,
anything.
Saying that, I bought three albums last week.
But can you play it? I mean, are they physical ones?
No, they're on the phone.
That's the point, isn't
they're
it?
They're on the phone.
I mean, I occasionally go home, because believe it or not, I'm old-fashioned enough. I still got this old-fashioned CD player, record player, and it's a stack, and it'll play music. And I just get sometimes, I think, do you know what? I haven't heard that band for a while, and I can put the LP on and hear it. And I know you can do that with the new system, stream system, but it just doesn't seem the same to me.
There's no effort.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I like to know that I can hear. I know it sounds silly, but you can hear the static sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, you can hear the crackle on the. I need to change that stylus.
Do you know, I've got a Beach Boys LP, Shut Down Volume 2. It's got to be 64 years old. And the hole where the thing used to go, worn down so much, but I can still play that now, and it has the same standard as it was when I bought it.
Yeah, but you can get the whole replacements, can't you?
Yeah, you get these little triangle things.
Yeah. So next up then, it was written by Nils Sedaka. It was first recorded by him, and it appeared on his 1975 studio album, The Hungry Years. It didn't release it as a single, but it was made popular when it was covered by that wonderful duo that he was writing for, Captain and Tennille. Well, this comes from the Hungry Years album. It is Nils Sedaka, and it is Lonely Night.
You
Lonely Night, Angel Face. Well, any sort of face.
Where'd that come? Room. Where did that come in the charts?
It was never released. No. It was never released as a single.
I don't remember it coming out at all, actually.
No, it never did. No. It was released by Captain and Tennille, but never by anybody else, because it wasn't his to release. He wrote it for them. They released it. And I don't know, I'm not so sure that they charted it. I shall have a look in a second while I'm playing the next.
Which is?
This one is Captain and Tennille. This one is one of their favourite ones. This is Love Will Keep Us Together. You'll recognise this one. Trying to leap in there. So that was their first record. This was their last. Total change of attitude.
Do that to me one more time. I can never get enough
So that's our journey with Captain and Tennille. Can't be a long journey. They only had 4 records in the charts.
Yeah, but made a lot of money out of it.
They did, they did. And that last one, Tony Tennille singing, was a lot different to when Daryl Dragon, who was the captain, was singing. Because Daryl Dragon sounded so much like, and I'm not so sure it wasn't Neil Sedaka singing. They sound so similar.
Well, the name itself in the film, in the titles there, suggests that they had an anonymous singer in that rather than the real, that's not the real person.
Oh, okay. So which do you want next then? That one or that one?
Well, I think we
the
should
blue
have,
one or the yellow one?
I think we should have the yellow one, Stupid Cupid.
So tell me about Connie Francis and the Stupid Cupid.
Well, this one came out in 1958, and I think this is a rehash done that was done in the early 70s as well. But other than that, it was another one with Calendar Girl, all the rest of them, big one. And
Stupid Cupid, you're a real mean guy. I'd like to clip your wings so you can fly.
Stupid Cupid,
I'm in love and it's a crying shame.
Stupid Cupid,
and I know that you're the one to blame.
Stupid Cupid,
hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me. I can't do my homework. Picking on me.
Connie Francis, Stupid Cupid, and you're right, 1958.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was ever released.
Yeah.
Right, that's it then. Just one more left to play in a minute, and we'll be a bit short with that one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone through a good selection of his music, that's for certain.
Been a bit wide-ranging, hasn't it?
Yeah, and variations of what other people have done on his stuff, which is good. It's like opera, really. If you get a good opera written by, I don't know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, something like that, then it's always going to be good music, whoever does it, if they do it properly.
Yeah, if you say so.
Well, you're obviously not a...
Bob, thank you for tonight.
That's all right.
Thank you for inviting me to share your show.
It's not my show, it's your show.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me to share your show on my show.
Yeah, you'll have to come down and share my show sometimes and... Of course, mayhem and mine as well.
Yeah, because you do 2 hours every week, don't you?
Yeah, every Tuesday.
I ain't got time to do 2 hours. Lordy,
but
I can only say, please tune in next week. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing yet. Have a look at Facebook and all the other social media sites we've got. One of them will tell you what we're doing. Good old Sarah will write it up for me and let you know what's happening.
Whatever you are doing, it's a good show, because I always listen to your show.
I'd like to listen to yours. But unfortunately I'm working. My boss gets a bit upset in the middle of the meeting.
I'm not ever sensitive on things like that.
Okay. But you, 50s and 60s is good music. So from me, Paul Dodd.
And me, Bob Whitbread.
We can only say thank you very much indeed for listening. And that is When the Music Takes Us.
Put your hands together for me now. Helping me to find my way when the day. my soul exploding. There's a good